If he eat us up, Matt is the end of us.
That's great.
Thank you a whole lot.
Great.
Well,
gee whiz.
Yeah, Doug?
All right. You know, it's funny because I also spent a lot of time. I lived in Yancey County and have a cabin up there. And for a while, I was working with the schools. And that the big toe was one story that we just couldn't tell there because all the kids had heard it. They all knew that. It's sort of interesting just to hear it when it gets matured here, you know.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. You look a little eat up. It looked like to me you were. So let's see here. There once was a big black crow sitting high up in them trees. In his thick black beak he had a big old hunk of cheese. Along come a sleek red fox, as sly as he could be. Say, I'm gonna get me some of that cheese now. You just wait and see. Oh, crow, if your voice is half as beautiful as them fine pretty feathers I see, it would please my ears to hear you sing a sweet soft melody. Well, that crow never heard anyone say such a complimentary thing, so it opened his beak and began to caw and squawk and sing. Down fell that cheese to the mouth of the fox below. You've stolen my dinner, you dirty red thief. Oh, no, no, no! Not so, not so, said the fox. It was a fair enough trade, vain crow, don't you see, with your head up in the trees. Don't you see, you got the compliments and I got the cheese. You got the compliments and I got the cheese. You got the compliments and...
I had help on that one from two really great, well-known storytellers. One was quite an old feller named Aesop, and another was a contemporary storyteller named Heather Forrest. I had a lot of help from both of them on that. Well, let's see. I promised my weaving class here, my bass weaving class, that we'd do a story something about weaving. And so I'll just tell you a story. Chipmunk, oh chipmunk, what makes your cheeks so round? I've been digging in the dirt and gathering them seeds and them nuts, gonna storm in my hole in the ground, Lord, storm in my hole in the ground. All right, don't you love those little chipmunks? You know how they run around in the woods, brown color, singing in the fall of the year? A lot of times up in the mountains, you'll hear them, and you'll hear them just echoing around from the hillsides. In the fall of the year, they make this little cluck noise, kind of a... And sometimes you'll hear them just answering each other back and forth. The old people in the mountains always say that what they're saying, they're celebrating the fact that they've been gathering seeds and nuts and they've got them all stored away, and they're singing, chest full, locked up, chest full, locked up. And you can hear them back and forth. Well, one day, I was walking in the woods and I was with an Indian buddy of mine. And we were listening to those chipmunks and they were running back and forth, and I was talking to him about chipmunks, and he said, did you ever look inside one? I said, inside a chipmunk? He said, yeah, did you ever see a chipmunk's heart? I said, well, no, I never really did, now that I think of it. And he said, well, we have a story about that. And this is the story he told me, and this is right out of Chippewa Cree storytelling. And he said, a long time ago, a chipmunk girl was up in the tree. She was gathering seeds and nuts. Everyone loved the chipmunk girl. She was always singing in the woods, and her warm brownness just gave a real gentle sort of peaceful air to the woods, and everyone just loved her. There's sort of a sweetness and a youthfulness about her, and she was up there, and she was gathering nuts, and she was getting ready to take them down and stash them under the ground, when all of a sudden she looked down the tree, and she sees Badger down there. Now, Badger loves to eat chipmunks, and he looks up, and he saw her, and he just knew if he could get her down that tree, he would get a fine meal. And, well, she knew about Badger a little bit, and he says, "Hey, chipmunk girl, come on down, come on down. We could play together. I really like you, chipmunk girl. Come on down, come on down." And she said, "Oh, no, Mr. Badger, I'm very shy. I just could never come down there and play with a fella like you. I could never do that." "Oh, come on, chipmunk girl, come on down. I love you, chipmunk girl, I really love you. Come on down, come on down." She says, "Oh, no, Badger, I'm too shy. I'm just too shy. Oh, chipmunk girl, come on down. I'll marry you. Would you marry me?" I don't think this sounds familiar to you. I don't know why it could, but it's really an old Indian story. It has no relevance to today, you understand. And "Come on, I'll marry you, chipmunk girl. Oh, I just really love you. I could just devour you. I mean, come on down, chipmunk girl. We could get married." And she says, "Oh, I'm just too shy to marry a big fellow like you, Badger. I could never do that. I could never do that." But she realized that he was going to wait under that tree until she came down. And she had to think of some kind of trick. And so what she decided, "All right, Badger, well, maybe on second thought, maybe we could get married, but I'm very shy. I'm very shy. I couldn't have you look at me. Would you cover your eyes? And then I'd come down." He says, "Sure, chipmunk girl, come on down. I'll cover my eyes. Sure, sure." And she says, "All right, you got your eyes covered." And he had his paws up over his eyes. And what she figured she'd do is she'd just come running down that tree, get right over top of his head, take a flying leap, and then just head for all she was worth into grandmother's lodge down under the ground. And there she would be protected. So she started down there. She says, "You got your eyes covered, Badger?" He says, "Yeah, I got my eyes covered." And she started down that tree. She got down that tree right over top of his head. And he had his eyes covered, but he was peeking. And she took a flying leap over top of his head. And as soon as she did, he took a flying leap and he had her. He grabbed her. He grabbed her right behind. She had him right behind those front legs. And she could just feel those long, sharp claws just raking down her sides. And she struggled and she fought and she pulled and she pushed. And she finally managed to wriggle free. But those claws just raked down her side. She dashed as far as fast as she could for grandmother's lodge. And you know those chipmunks, you know, they still have that stripe on the side. Yeah. They really do. They really do. And she dove right into grandmother's lodge. And she got into grandmother's lodge, and she got down there, and she says, "Grandmother, hide me. Badger's after me. Badger's after me. Badger's after me. You got to hide me. Got to hide me." She says, "Here, get under those blankets here. Get under the blankets." And soon Badger was in hot pursuit, and he dug his way down into grandmother's lodge and says, "All right, where is she? Where is she?" And grandmother says, "Oh, who are you looking for?" He says, "I'm looking for the badger. I'm looking for the chipmunk girl. Where is she? Where is she?" And she says, "Oh, the chipmunk girl, she's gone. She's visiting another village. She's far away right now." And he goes, "My nose tells me she's here. I'm going to find her." And he just started tearing the place apart. He was looking in every corner, every crevice. And then all of a sudden he saw those blankets move. And he reached under there and he caught her. And grandmother says, "Oh, don't hurt her. Don't hurt her. She's a chipmunk girl. Everyone loves her. She's so sweet. And she brings such a beauty to the woods. And everyone laughs and smiles when she's around. Oh, don't." He says, "I'm a badger. Her life will nourish me. She is my food. She is my energy." And he bit her head right off. And there she was. And grandmother says, "Oh, if you're..." And he took the head off. And he took her skin off. And he started to eat all the meat off her bones. And she said, "Oh, if you're not gonna eat her head and those bones, wouldn't you just let me have them so I can give her a decent burial?" And every time he finished, he'd throw a bone over to grandmother. And then she said, "If you're not gonna you're gonna eat that skin, will you just let me have the skin, please?" And she says, "We can give her a decent burial that way." And he was finished. He threw the skin over there and the head, and then he was gone. Well, all the other creatures came around and they said, "Grandmother, grandmother, please, oh, isn't there some way you can bring her back? You're a powerful woman. You're a medicine woman. Isn't there any way you could bring her back?" And she said, "Well, look, we got her skin here. We got her head. We've got her bones. Well, let's see. But we got to have something to make a body with." Have you got anything to make a body with? Could you go out and find something, she said. And they said, well, we'll try, grandmother, we'll try. And they went and they scoured the countryside. It was the fall of the year. They really couldn't find anything to make a chipmunk body out of. They went looking all over. They came back, and they came back very discouraged. And they said, Grandma, that's what we got. We got a whole bunch of dry grass. That's the only thing we could find. And she went, ah, that's the sacred sweet grass. That's perfect. Aha. And she said, okay. And now, grandmother, she was a medicine woman. She was a powerful person. And not only was she that, she was a weaver. And she started weaving. And she took that grass, and she wove it, and she wove it, and she turned it around. But she wasn't weaving a basket. No, she was weaving a body for the chipmunk girl. And she took it, and she wove it, and she wove it, and she wove it. And soon, she had a little body. And she took that body, and she tucked that body in there, had two little legs on it. She took all the bones, and she stuck all those little bones right into the legs and all the rib bones. And she got that tail all lined up and got those legs and got them all stoked up there and got her all finished. She said, okay, now she was ready to sew it up, but she said, oh, we got to have a heart. You gotta have heart, says Grandma. And she said, we gotta have a heart. And they said, Grandma, we were lucky. We couldn't even hardly find a body. She said, you did fine on the body. Go out there and find a heart. Well, they went out and they started roaming the countryside, back and forth. They couldn't find anything. They couldn't find anything to make a heart out of. They came back and they said, Grandmother, we can't find anything. There's nothing we can make a heart out there. We just looked all over. There's nothing there. And she said, well, you gotta have heart. She said, you gotta have heart. We gotta find something to make a heart with. And then out of the back of the crowd, they hear a little voice says, Grandma, I found the heart. I found the heart, Grandma. I found one. I did. I found one. And they look, and there's this little kid, a little toddler. Looked like she was 2 or 3 years old. She had little grubby, dirty hands, little dirty face. And she comes walking out of the back of them. She has her hand all bunched up. She says, I found the heart, Grandma. I did. I found the heart. I found the heart. I did. Yep. And they said, what did you find? And they said, let's see. And she, this little kid just opens up her hand. And in her hand was a round, red berry. And they said, that's just a berry. That'll never work. And grandmother said, hold it. A child's medicine is very strong. Let's try it. She took that berry out of that little girl's hand, and she put it right in the heart of that chipmunk, and she placed it in there, and then she sewed that little chipmunk up, and then she breathed the breath of life, sort of like artificial respiration, you know, and she breathed that breath of life into there, and all of a sudden that chipmunk girl, she woke right up, and everyone went, hooray, hooray, the chipmunk girl, she's back. And, you know, to this day, she's out there running around in the woods, you know. She's still, you know, her skin was pretty scratched up. She's still got that stripe down the side from where the badger's claws rake down her side. And, you know, she's pretty shy. She's even shyer than ever. Now she won't let you get near. She sees you coming, she screams and runs away. And my Indian friend said, and, you know, if you ever look inside a chipmunk and you look at a chipmunk's heart, you will see that it's round and red like a berry. And you know, I always wondered about that after I heard that story. And now I would never go off and kill a chipmunk just to look at his heart. But one day I was driving along the road, and what did I see? What did I see? But there was a fresh killed little chipmunk. I pulled right over. I had to look. And I pulled over, and I got my little pocket knife out, and I picked that little chipmunk girl up in my hand, and I took my sharp knife, and I cut open that chest cavity, and I looked inside, and that heart was round and red like a berry. Thank you.
Tell you, Doug's correct about the heart, because when we were kids, we used to get infestations of those things down at my best friend's granddad's, and they would just about carry out all the corn out of his granary if we would have allowed them to do so. He didn't have rat problems, he had chipmunk problems. So we didn't like to waste anything, and we did kill an awful mess of those things, and we would eat them. We'd have chipmunk pie. And they do have, I hadn't thought of that in years, a little round red heart. Yeah, that's very true.
Great, one more confirmation could I want, right?
That's true. That's right. I hadn't thought of that in years. Nice little reminiscence there. Yeah. At least 25 years.
Well, our next storyteller comes from West Virginia, from Hinton, West Virginia. Jimmy Costa grew up in that town and learned traditional music and also storytelling from the people around him. And Jimmy?
Well, mine are somewhat, some are protracted, but others are short anecdotes. I spent a lot of my, I guess, teen years and up into my early 20s in a store working in the public, and I spent a lot of my years, especially my teen years and up until my early 20s in a public business in a store, small town that I grew up in of Hinton, and I got to know a lot of the people that came in and paid their bills, and also got around the countryside an awfully lot for a lot of reasons, and I would hear stories, people would tell me stories, things that happened in their family or something that happened to them, and one of my favorite stories, in fact, there was an ancestor of mine involved in this one. There's an area in West Virginia that's known as Charleston. That's our state capital. And it's in Kanawha County. And there's also another not too far away from the Charleston area on Route 60. There's a little community called Burning Springs. And I always thought it was a quite humorous situation of how Burning Springs was discovered. There was a trapping party on the Kanawha River. And one of those trappers was a fellow by the name of the Reverend John Alderson. And I think it was my third or fourth great-grandfather on my mother's side was on in this excursion. And they'd been down on the Kanawha River trapping. So they decided to make camp. They had gathered up all their traps and skinned out their animals. And they thought, well, it's time to put up for the night, and we'll go up and find us a safe place to lodge. So they saw this tributary coming on into the river, Big Creek, and they thought, well, now that looks like a nice secluded place. And this was back in the early times, about 1785, 90. Still Indians down in that area, and they weren't that familiar with the area. They didn't know the Indians friendly, unfriendly, or what. So they wanted a place of seclusion and safety, so they go up this creek. Well, they start preparing their camp. They come up and they find them a little old rocky, sandy bench. There was another old fellow with them, and as all the old fellows at that time were, they all wore heavy face beards and a lot of hair. They were outdoorsmen, and they didn't cut their hair maybe once every year or something, trimmed it up in the summer months. And so they're all bushy, and their old buckskins and their old homespuns they had on, and they send one of the camp party to go out and pick up a little bit of firewood. They wanted to build them a camp, just to have them a fire there for the night. It was a bit chilly up this old hollow that they had found themselves in where this big creek came out. Well, unbeknownst to anyone in the party, not too far up this creek, there was a big natural gas spring. There was a water spring, and out of it issued natural gas. Well, in that time and year, of course, those men had never had any experience with anything like that. So the fellow that's gathering the firewood, he catches himself a bit in the dark. You know, it started to get dark on him. So he decides he's got a lot of old dry bundles of branches and all. He takes out an old tinder box and works around with it. In no time at all, he's got him a bit of a flame, and he blows her up, and he gets a big bundle on fire and makes him a torch. That's how the old people would go about at night. They made torches. So he's got his torch, and he's just getting up the hollow there and just finding all kinds of dry branches and wood to bring back. Next thing, he gets around there where all this natural gas had settled in there for the night. The whole place catches on fire. Everything. The water was on fire. Everything that was burnable, including all the hair on his face and head, just went up in one big blaze. Well, he was completely terrified. You know, said he came running back in the camp. They didn't even hardly recognize him. He was in such a state. He had not a hair on his face or head. And they finally got him calmed down, figured out who it was, and they said, "What in the world? What's happened? What's wrong? What's happened to you?"
He says, boys, he says, we've got to break camp and break camp now. He says, for the mouth of hell's not a quarter of a mile from here.
Yeah.
And to this day, that little place is called Burning Springs, and it's near Cedar Grove, West Virginia, and that's how it got its name. Yep.
Can you tell us another one?
Well, yeah, I can tell you another. This is one that I'll never forget because I was right amongst it when it was told. I used to spend a lot of time at a place called Green Sulphur Springs with my best friend and his grandfather, who had a large farm there. And one time, as we had done many, many times, we had walked out of the hollow where the old man Cales lived and came down to the store where he got his mail. He didn't get his in a royal box. He liked to, it was another excuse to get to go to the store, you know, and see who was there. And so we walked out of the hollow with him one day. It was a good mile walk, nice walk. And we had our guns with us, in fact, because it was rabbit season. And we just kind of meandered down out of the area there where he lived and came on down onto Lick Creek and went on over and crossed the highway and went over to the store. So we got in there and it was around 11:30, and there were a lot of older men in there. This was about 1962 or 3. And a lot of these other old fellas had been hunting, and they'd been out since daybreak. And we walked in there, and the place looked like an arsenal. They had their guns all stacked, you know, and they'd come down to the store to get them some coffee and pick up their mail. They were all old folks of the community, and there wasn't a young person amongst them except myself and my best buddy. And these old men at the time, they were all in their late 60s, early 70s. Old man Preacher Bill Hicks was about 90. And so they had their guns all stacked up along the counter, and they were getting coffee, and they had a great big old coal jacket stove that they'd all set around keep warm at. Well, this old fellow walks up to Mr. Cales. His name was Clarence, the old man Cales was. And he says, the old gentleman's name that questioned him, was named Lester Duncan. And he looks at Mr. Cales and he says, you know, he says, Clarence, he says, there's something I've got to ask you. He said, I've just thought and thought about this. He says, you know, he said, you sparked and courted the best looking woman in these parts. And he said, not only that, you married her. And he said, you never were that good-looking a fella in your youth. He says, now how do you explain that? He said, her name was Bessie Clay. He said, Bessie was the best-looking woman in this country. He said, how'd you ever be able to marry that woman? And Clarence looked at old man Duncan and he said, you know, he says, Lester, he says, I've studied about that a right smart myself. And he says, I've just come to believe, he said, love is just like lightning. It's as apt to strike an outhouse as it is a castle. And
that's so true. I mean, it's so true. And I love it. You know,
I'll never forget that.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell one of my favorite people that used to come in my dad's store where I worked. I could tell stories half the night on this old gal. This is my favorite one. Her name was Nellie Hammonds, and she was related to the famous Hammonds through marriage, the old fiddling Hammondses. And she used to come in the store. She was about 4'9". And she, like many of the old people that would come there, they would always pay on their accounts a third of the month religiously. You know, you could just hear the door open all day long on the third of the month, because here they'd come. So she was one of these folks that she took her good old time about anything that she did, and she'd be totally oblivious to, I've seen people pile up behind her clear out into the street, you know, and she'd just be in her old way of hunting in her pocketbook and looking for a bill, and she'd almost crawl in her pocketbook. She had these huge pocketbooks, and I can still see this. As long as I live, I'll never forget this. One day, she'd come in, and it was the third of the month, and I mean, we'd have as many as, you know, it was a cable system, so a lot of folks have television. We'd have 800 to 900 people go through that place in 6 to 8 hours, you know. But with Miss Hammonds in there, like I said, she was totally oblivious to anybody else, you know. She, not in a way of neglect or whatever, she just had her own ways of doing things, and they were slow. So She comes in there one day and she get these big old patent leather plastic looking pocketbooks. They'd be like this. They'd be much bigger than her, you know. She called them a handbag. She was always a toting her handbag around, she called it. Well, her handbag was her office, I finally concluded. She had everything in the world in that thing. And if she'd ever got caught away from home, she could have lived out of it for 2 days, because she'd pull the awfulest bunch of stuff out of there you ever saw, trying to hunt her bill. So this one day, I'll never forget, she sets that thing down in the middle of the floor. And she just totally inverted herself almost. She stuck her head down in, she jerked it open like this. And the next thing I know, she just dove down into it. And meantime, there are all these people backing up behind her, you know, where she's totally oblivious to them. And you could hear her talking in her book, in her handbag. And I just got hysterically, I was in hysterics. I was just beating the counter laughing, you know, like this. She was in that thing for 5 minutes. I thought she's going to smother. And you'd hear her down there, "Oh, my God, I got more papers in here than a $2 lawyer." You'd hear her say stuff like that, you know. Well, she'd finally find her bill and she'd get it paid. Well, that was one example of Mrs. Hammonds. Well, she came in the store one day. This was right after Jimmy Carter's administration had come into Washington. I'll never forget this. And I've often said what I asked her about what she thought of our new administration, a new president. Well, I knew that she'd been kind of upset with the whole going-ons of the politics and the political rhetoric that had been on television. You know, all those political things would preempt the stories. You know, she called them her soap derbies. "Oh, I can't get none of them soap derbies on the television." She didn't call them soap operas. They were soap derbies. Soap derbies. Said, "I swear to God, every time I turn the television on, there's some politician on there running his mouth, you know." So she was really upset about that. She didn't know who was in bed with this one or who was doing this with that one, you know. So one day after the whole thing was over, I thought, well, I'll ask Ms. Hammonds what she thinks now that's all done with, you know. I had no idea of her political persuasion, nothing whatsoever. So she came in there and I said, "Ms. Hammonds," and I've often said you could have a doctorate in political science and not sum up our political system any better than this, especially our national system. I said, "Ms. Hammonds, what do you think about our new president?" And as they'd say around home, she didn't even draw a long breath, and I'm not going to clean it up either. This is what she said. She said, "There ain't nothing to him up there," he said, "in Washington. Why, it's just the same old pile of shit with a new swarm of flies." Oh, that's a good one, yeah. This is another one that's I like too. I may have to give you a little insight here, but if you've ever grown up on farms and you grew up in the time near when people raised a lot of their own grain, and that would be wheat and corn. The old time folks raised grain not only for human consumption, but most of it for animals, you know, feed the chickens and the hogs and such things. Sweeten up your stock in the wintertime a little bit with corn, along with their fodder. So my best friend's granddaddy was one of the old time set. He did all that. He raised all of his own grain, and he had a granary, and he had big barrels and bins to keep the things, all of his corn and his wheat in. Well, if you got an infestation of chipmunks or mice, it was amazing how quick they could clean out one of those big barrels. It was amazing. He'd have these great big 55-gallon old wooden flour barrels and oil drums and whatever, and they could just, in a night's time, they brought their family and all the relatives in the region, I believe, and they'd just clear out these granaries. Well, you know, if you have any experience at all, the mouse seems like food just goes straight through them, and wherever they eat, that's where they deposit all their droppings. And I've seen those old barrels just full of rat droppings and mice droppings, chipmunk droppings. and very much overwhelming what grain was left. Well, this old fellow told me one time, he said, my daddy, he said, was the only Republican in the voting precinct where he was from. And he said he went to the polls one day, he's about 75, 80 years old, and all of his old contemporaries, old buddies, they'd always hound him, you know, every 4 years, presidential elections, because they'd cancel his vote out. They were all Democrats. And he said he came out of the polls one day, and they all met him as usual, you know, but he had both barrels ready for him this time. He said, well, said Ellie, says, how do you feel now after it was obvious who was going to be the victor, you know, what party, said. Said, how do you feel coming out of the polls and voting Republican amongst us all? He says, boys, he says, I'll tell you, he says, I feel just like a grain of wheat in a barrel full of rat turds.